Welcome, everyone, to our Parsha class, Vayera 2021-5782. We titled the class, Keeping Up Appearances. So my theme for tonight is the following. We're going to see that the word to look at, to see, to appear, that these words are used interchangeably and multiple times from the beginning of the Parsha, from the beginning of this week's Torah reading, right to the famous end of the Torah reading. The word appears in different contexts. So before we explore, let's just talk about the word. The word is a three-letter word. Ra'ah. Resh, Aleph, He. It is to see, to look at. It can also be used in a different way. Vayera, the name of our section is Vayera. God appeared. So it's all about sight. It's all about looking, seeing, appearing. And it's unusual because in every single story, literally from the visit of the three angels to Abraham at the beginning, to the name of the place where he brings Isaac up at the end as an ostensible offering, as a korban, as a sacrifice, what we call the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. Guess what the name of that place is? Bahar Yerael, at the mountain where God will be seen. So literally, from beginning to end, or invert it, from the end to the beginning, it's all about appearances. So keeping up appearances. So what I'd like to do is just go through some of the little stories inside and talk about the context of what it means to appear, to see. And why should this Parsha, this section of Torah, which is such a famous section because it builds the life of Abraham as Abraham, the circumcised one. Because remember, until the end of last week, Abraham was not Abraham. He was Avram, Abram. He gets elevated when he gets his circumcision. And it's only after his circumcision that he impregnates Sarah and we have Isaac, the firstborn member of our family. Yitzhak Avinu is born, has his circumcision at 8 days. He's sort of like the firstborn Jew. Abraham and Sarah are Jews by choice, which is why when a person converts to become Jewish, they take the father and mother, Abraham and Sarah, because they were the archetypes of the Jewish people. So every time you hear someone who is a convert to Judaism, who chooses Judaism, what we call a Ger Tzedek, a righteous convert, they're known as whatever their choice of name is. Let's call them Binyamin, Ben, son of Avraham, Abraham. And if you ask for a mom's name, you would say Sarah, because you take on their names. As, I'm trying to remember, it was Schwab, E.F. Hutton, it wasn't though. Do you remember the famous John Houseman, may he rest in peace, who won a Best Supporting Actor for The Paper Chase, playing a very formidable law professor, I think, at one of the Ivy League schools. He did all these commercials, and I can't remember, it wasn't E.F. Hutton, but he used to say, oh, Smith Barney. Thank you. My mind came back. Smith Barney, and his tagline for Smith Barney, if I remember this, 100 years later, it's a pretty good tagline, right? They earn it. Do you remember that? Smith Barney.
No, I didn't watch Selvin.
They earn it.
I was too busy studying my law.
Exactly, or your Talmud. They earn it. So Abraham and Sarah and Abraham, they earned the title, the mantle of the archetypes of the Jewish people. Very fascinating. So let's look at source one. You ready? Okay. Number one. This is the very first verse of our parsha. Okay? I'll read it to you in Hebrew, and then we'll translate it together in English, in number one. Vayera elav Hashem, and God appeared to him, I like when they use pronouns, Abraham, be'elone Mamre, in the plains of Mamre, v'hu, and he, Abraham, Yoshev, was sitting, petach ha'ohel, at the doorway, the entranceway, of the tent, kichom hayom, when the day was hot. So on a simplistic thing, you would say, you know, 1, 2 in the afternoon when the the sun is really bearing down on you. But there's much more to that, of course. Why did the Lord, why did God appear to him? Now remember, if a parsha chooses the word Vayera, and he appeared, as the name for the entire story from beginning to end, you can probably guess, as we're exploring tonight thematically, that he appeared. Appearances are in order of the parsha, meaning God is naming the parsha, the section of Torah, Vayera, he appeared to him, because it's a significant thematic element. Okay? And the Lord appeared to him. Why did God visit Abraham? So we say famously that Abraham was sick. He came to visit the sick. Now, he wasn't sick in a conventional way, but, oh my gosh, get the heebie-jeebies when I tell you this one. Okay, ready? Ready for the whatever the heebie-jeebies are, you're going to get the heebie-jeebies. Ready? Abraham mauled himself. He circumcised himself at age 99. Just deal with that one for a moment, okay? And try not to cringe. That's a cringe-worthy moment. 99 years old to himself. Wow.
He was too old to feel the pain.
I don't know. He had 76 more delightful years, but I hear you. He had 76 delightful years beyond. Now, number three. We said when the day was hot. So we said, you know, it must be when the sun is at the hottest in the early afternoon. More than that. You ready for this? The Holy One, blessed is He, God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, took the sun out of its sheath so as not to trouble Abraham with wayfarers, visitors, people walking on the roads. He put it up, he turned the thermostat to 155 degrees Celsius. But since he saw that Abraham was troubled, he was bothered, that no wayfarers were coming, God brought the angels to Abraham in the guise, in the likeness of men. Now this is downright confusing. Okay, let's just speak over what we just learned. So Abraham is sick. Now he's really about to get healed because God comes to him. One of the three angels is a man named Raphael, who is God's emissary for refuah, healing. So it's not conventional type of healing, because he did the little surgical procedure to himself, so it's not like he's a chola, he's ill, yeah, but why? Okay, let me ask you a question. Why does God make it super hot that day to spare Abraham? Because he's hurt. 3 days after a circumcision is a troublesome day. However much more so for a 99-year-old man is 3 days removed from surgery. We all know sometimes, you know, if anyone here has ever had an operation, sometimes the day of, the anesthesia is still there. A couple of days after that anesthesia leaves the blood system, you're no longer maybe in the hospital, you're home. And sometimes that second or third day after some event is when you really feel the pain. Abraham was really feeling the pain. So God wanted to spare Abraham having to host somebody, meaning Abraham and Sarah, that was their livelihood, unpaid livelihood. Anyone comes along the road, idolater or not idolater, they would bring them into their Holiday Inn in Beersheba, and they would host them and feed them and take care of them, keep them out of the sun. So God wanted to have mercy on Abraham. He didn't want Abraham to have to worry about others when he had himself to worry about. But instead, what is poor Abraham doing? He pulls up his chair next to the entranceway of the tent. And he's constantly, even though he's in pain, clearly, he's constantly looking out from his tent, where are the visitors? Where are the people I can help? At some point, because God knows everything, God realizes, Hashem said, oh my gosh, you know, here I did the heat of the day thing in order to dissuade others from bothering Abraham. But by doing this, I actually pained poor Abraham. I didn't realize, I mean, you're God, I don't know why you wouldn't realize, but okay, separate question. But what is the reaction of God? Let me ask you, if you're God and there aren't any wayfarers and Abraham's upset, turn the thermostat down, right? Just turn the thermostat down. You're too schwitzy, you're hot. Okay, go from 150, go down to 90, and then everything's okay. And then humans will come on the road again, everything will be great. No. He keeps the thermostat at 150 degrees. Don't want to see his UGI bill. But he's God, so I like to see them collect, you know? So 150 degrees, he leaves the temperature status quo. And instead of sending people who actually could benefit from Abraham and Sarah's hosting abilities, who does he send? He dresses three of his angels up as humans and says, okay, go make Abraham feel worthy and useful. Go on the road. Pretend you're some Bedouins looking for a place. Isn't that bizarre? File this away for a little later, okay? But keep this in mind. In other words, the logical reaction to me, turn the thermostat down. Then you'll have humans to serve. No. Let's keep the thermostat up. And Hashem says, I'm going to send fake humans. So Abraham and Sarah can think that they're actually useful, but they're going to be serving people who are not people, who therefore don't need physical needs addressed. Correct? Keep that in mind. We'll come back at the end. Number four. So what happens? Abraham lifted his eyes and he saw. Okay? So this is another use of the idea of looking. Ra'ah, ro'eh. And what did he see? Hine, behold, three men were standing over him. He saw, Abraham saw. So he ran toward them from the entrance of the tent and bowed toward the ground. Then he asked God, he says, God, you know, I know we were talking in conversation, but I really need to go take care of these three men. Would you mind, you know, I'm going to put you on hold for a couple of minutes. I love that, right? You're talking on your Verizon God phone and you get a call on the other line. Hashem, could you hold on? I got to take this one. What? So he puts Hashem on hold. I have to take care of these three men. So Abraham hurried to the tent to Sarah, and he says, Mahari, hurry up, please. Three saws of meal, fine flour, knead and make cakes. And to the cattle did Abraham run. And he took a calf, tender and good, and he gave it to the youth. And he hastened to prepare it. So he made them a delicious repast. And he took cream and milk as a first course, because it's milk before meat, and the calf as a second course that he had prepared, and he placed the food before the angels. And Abraham was standing over them under the tree, and the angels ate. This is the only recorded instance in human history where there's even a debate about angels actually eating, because angels don't eat. But it could be, according to some opinions, in order to fully honor Abraham and Sarah's enormous sacrifice and the repast that they prepared. So in honor of that, the angels actually were able somehow to eat. Now, if they did eat, did they need to eat? Certainly not. They're angels, whatever that means. They're spiritual entities. They're not physical. I like the other opinion, that they pretended to eat. And you all did this once. Think back when you were a kid. Right? And mom served you the meatloaf, but then there were some Brussels sprouts on that plate. And there were some other undesirable items perhaps on that plate. And you had a little dog, Ralphie, who was kind of looking for scraps around the table and went, everyone's smiling because you did this, right? And when mom or dad weren't looking carefully, perhaps some of the dinner that you were required to finish perhaps made its way to Ralphie. Correct? So that's kind of what's going on here. In other words, Abraham and Sarah are busy bringing the food, and Abraham's turned this way, and the angel's like putting the food in his pocket so he won't insult Abraham. Right. Maybe they had a couple dogs running around, or they're putting the food in their pockets, right? They're saying, look over there. And Abraham turns around, and he takes the steak, and he puts it in his pocket, and he's not eating. Either way, it's a bizarre situation, which is the question we're asking. Why not turn the heat down and have actual people come? Okay, let's think about that. Number five, let's continue with the same thematic element of seeing or appearing. You ready? Number five, let's carry on. And two of the angels came to Sodom in the evening. This is the infamous story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the five cities that were in the Kikar HaYarden, the plains of the Jordan, very rich, fertile area. Lot, where was he? The nephew of Abraham. He was Abrahaming. He was sitting at the gate of Sodom. Phil, I'm sorry I didn't go down far enough. Do you see it now? Sorry. Phil, can you still hear me? I don't know if I lost Phil. I might have lost him. I don't know. I think he, one second. Okay. Phil is still there. So I'm going to go back to the screen share. I apologize. Okay. But I didn't roll it down close enough. So let me roll it down again. Start broadcast. Technology is great when it works. Starting broadcast. Okay.
How do you know?
So we're on source number 5. Michael, just hold on to a little bit more. We're going to have a break in the action, okay? So the two angels come to Sodom in the evening. Lot was sitting by the gates of Sodom. And look in the bold. Now Lot saw. There's that word again. Roeh. Same word. He saw. And he stood up to meet the angels. And he bowed. Face to the ground. So the short and long end of it is this. Sodom and Gomorrah had a law. No guests. Capital crime to host guests. But Lot, that night, was looking for guests. So the rabbis have a tradition that that night was Passover. Now, I understand that the story of Passover, the Exodus, doesn't take place for hundreds of years into the future, but it was the same date on the Jewish calendar, the 15th day of Nisan, that was that night. And perhaps Lot was making some type of matzah, because he got it from Abraham, that they would traditionally have a little bit of matzah and some stuff at the Seder, at the Passover meal, even though there wasn't a Passover. Now you could understand why, right? Very simple. Think about it. Abraham was shown the future, and he knew his children were going to go to a strange land, and there was going to be a darkness for hundreds of years. That land would be Egypt. And at the end of that darkness would be Passover, and that would be the liberation from the darkness. So one would understand that as a loving grandfather, Abraham and Sarah and grandma, they would want to sort of start observing, even in advance, something that hadn't happened yet. It's like precognition. But since God had told Abraham and Sarah that this was going to happen, it was an eventuality. Okay, so Lot was celebrating what he learned from his uncle Abraham. And he was risking life and limb of his family and himself. And he was waiting by the gates of Sodom for passerbyers. Two guys come. Which two guys? The angels who are coming. One to extract Lot, to save him and his family. And the other two, nuclear option against Sodom. By the way, there was an archaeological release that you can find from about 3 weeks ago, where they actually believed they actually proved archaeologically, with science, and I don't pretend to understand this, that there was this cosmic supernova style event that imploded that area, and they even dated it right around the time where Sodom and Gomorrah would have lived and existed, and it was just blown up. And they actually proved through archaeological evidence that there was some this calamitous event. They call it a cosmic something something, and you can look it up. It was just released all over the media, the news, which would explain maybe what happened. So what is Lot doing then? He's looking for what? The same way that Abraham at the beginning is ill, yes, but he's looking for guests, 150 degrees. Lot is even greater maybe than Abraham, right? Because he's risking literally his life and limb on the hope that there might be guests to bring into his home. He sees the angels. He doesn't leave them on the street. He brings them home. They serve a little meal. Mrs. Lot goes and borrows some salt from next door. She says, oh, by the way, I need salt because my husband brought some guests in. And we know the end of the story, right? The people of Sodom and Gomorrah surround Lot's house. We want the men. He says, no, you can't have the men. You can have the daughters. Not a very nice thing to do, to say the least. And then in the end, the angels implore him to leave. He leaves with the two daughters. The rest of his family refuses to leave. They cannot believe destruction is imminent. And Mrs. Lot turns back and looks at that fateful moment, turns into a pillar of salt. Lot and his two daughters escape up into the mountains. Okay? Now, last, before we have a break for Michael to ask your question, number 6. And his wife, Lot's wife, looked from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. So again, do you see how it's just like boom, boom, boom? Every story is all about appearing, looking, seeing. and it's going to get even more and more of an issue. Michael, quick question.
How? It can wait for the end.
Okay, fine. So I will remind you at the very end.
Because it's a multi-layer.
Right, right.
Are the two angels two of the three?
Correct. They are two of the three. One went home, apparently after doing his mission to heal Abraham, and the other two were there. Okay. Number seven. Now we're going to fast forward. We're going to fast forward to the story of Avimelech, the king of Gerar. He lives south of Israel, kind of where Gaza is. Not much has changed in a couple thousand years. So Avimelech was in the southern place, Gaza area, and Abraham and Sarah come there. And just like last week we learned, what did Abraham ask Sarah as a favor when they went to Egypt? Please don't tell everybody that we're married because they'll kill me and take you as the wife. Same thing here. There isn't anybody who fears God here, Abraham says to Sarah, so please protect me. Say that we're like siblings. Don't say that we're married. So exactly what happens. That night, Abimelech, his whole family, and his whole harem were all infertile. They were all stopped up by God. They could not conceive. And Abimelech realizes he's going to die. So he returns Sarah, untouched, to Abraham, and he says, please pray for me. But then before he says that, and Abraham does pray, which is amazing, right? What's the one thing in the world that Abraham wants more than anything else?
A child.
And he has to pray for someone else who is like the enemy who just stole and kidnapped his wife. He has to pray for that guy to have a child, but he can't pray for himself? Unbelievable. Anyways, so Avimelech is not a happy camper, right? He says to Abraham, look, your God, he's kind of a vengeful guy. Because I didn't really do anything wrong. And he says to Abraham, look at this. Number seven. Avimelech says to Abraham, What did you see that you did this thing? Why did you lie and say that you were brother and sister? So Abraham famously responds to Avimelech. He says, look, first of all, there was no one who feared God here. Ein yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh. No one fears God. You would have murdered me had I mentioned that I was married to Sarah. And secondly, technically, I didn't lie. You see, Sarah's my niece, and I'm the uncle. So where we come from in the Middle East, we're like brother and sister. Even though I can marry her, because it's legal for an uncle to marry a niece, in the Torah, I'm allowed to marry her, yes, but we're kind of like achim anachnu. We're kind of like we're bros. We're brother and sister. So technically, I didn't really lie. Now, of course, I've given this sermon on Rosh Hashanah, so I won't bore you right now. Why did he have to say both? Why not just say one or the other? Either you would have murdered me, so self-preservation, that's why I lied. Or, better, just say that technically, we are. So just be quiet, Avimelech. Leave me alone. Why does he say both? Because they're interrelated. You see, when they come to town, Avimelech sees the girl, the woman, Sarah. And he wants Sarah. So what is he told about Sarah? He's not told that she's not a married woman. All he is informed of is that the guy with her, brother and sister, correct? But he desperately wanted Sarah for himself. So he chose to only hear what he wanted to hear, and he disregarded the truth. The truth was, all he had to do was ask and say, Sarah, are you a married woman? And she would have said, of course. Oh, well, hands off. But because he didn't fear God, he wasn't interested in a little detail like, where's the husband? So Abraham basically says, look, you were the one, you wicked man, Avimelech, who jumped to the conclusion that Sarah didn't have a husband. I never said we weren't married. I said we're like a brother and sister. Because you don't fear God, you saw what you wanted to see. Oh my gosh, we're back at what people see in appearances again, aren't we? Wow. Let's go on. Gets better and better, okay? So number eight, this will be very, very fast. Sarah saw Ishmael, son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had born to Abraham, making merry. He was laughing and playing games around Isaac. And therefore, Sarah says, you got to get rid of the kid because he's a danger to our Isaac. This is after the birth of Isaac, and Isaac's a little boy, and Ishmael is playing like bows and arrows with Isaac as the target. And he's like jesting. Well, I'm not really trying to shoot the arrows to kill Isaac. I'm just, you know, looking for the apple on his head. So again, the influence of Ishmael against Isaac was not something that Sarah wanted. So they get rid of her. And what happens? Hagar goes out into the wilderness, and she was dying of thirst. So look at number 9. And God opened Hagar's eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the pouch with water and gave the lad to drink. So you had Sarah see Ishmael taunting and trying to hurt Isaac in an innocent way, quote unquote. And then Hagar sees the well of water. Just over and over again, right? Every single story from the beginning of the parsha to the end is all about what we see. And then most famously, we end with the famous Akedah, the binding of Isaac, where Isaac is taken by Abraham to ostensibly perhaps be a human offering, which he was never meant to be. But that's another story. But look on number 10. On the third day of their journey, Abraham was told by God, go to this place that I will show you. I left out a lot of show and appear just for expedience sake. It says in number 10 that on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. And Abraham said, God will seek out Yireh for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. And then Isaac said, well, where's the lamb? I see the knife. I see the sticks to burn things. Where's the sacrifice? God said, and Abraham says, God will show us who the sacrifice is. Okay, next. Number 12. Abraham lifted up his eyes when the angel basically told him, don't touch one hair on Isaac's head. And he saw. And lo, there was a ram that was caught in the tree by its horns. And then number 13, Abraham named that place, the Lord will see. As it is said to this day, on the mountain the Lord will be seen. So I think we get the theme, right? From beginning to end, I have, and I'm going to take everyone on Zoom off my screen share, okay? So that I can see everybody. Just give me one moment to go back to the Zoom. Here we go. Hey, Abe. Good to see you. Okay, so now we're back. So let's try to wrap this up, okay? From beginning to end, in a parsha named Appearances, and he appeared, God appeared to Abraham at the beginning, until the very, very classic denouement in the end, right? You would say the climax of the story of Abraham becoming Abraham, he is able to bring Isaac up. And we talk about this in Rosh Hashanah. From beginning to end, what did you see? What did you appear? What did you think did you see? Avimelech, if you had any fear of God, you would have seen the truth. So-and-so saw this person laughing. So-and-so saw a well of water. Over and over, it's all about what you see. Lot is out there looking for guests. Abraham's looking for guests. Everyone's looking and seeing and appearing. So what's going on? What's our parsha about? Remember, I filed a question away for further notice. Let's readdress the question. Ready? Anybody remember the question? How come the thermostat couldn't be turned down? That was our question. I promised you that was an integral part of the answer. Okay? Let's revisit the question. If Abraham is angry, not angry, he's upset, he's distressed, where are the humans? I want to be a host. I want to take care of people. I love people. So all Hashem had to do was turn the thermostat back from 150 to 80. And then like an hour later, you'd have some actual honest human beings who would require Abraham and Sarah's love and attention. And everything would be great. No, we don't do that. Let's leave the thermostat at 150. And instead of sending humans, I'll send fake humans. And Abraham and Sarah, you're going to go nuts. You're going to slaughter a cow, and you're going to get the best food you have, and you're going to run here, and you're going to run there. And in the end, I want to ask you a question. When the men, the three men, appear to Abraham, do they appear to him as angels, or do they appear to him as...
Call us out?
Do they appear to him as...
Uh, call it again. I'll scream up to her and tell her, you know, you're calling. Okay. Okay, bye.
We're back. The question is, why not turn the thermostat down and just have real people? Why send fake people? Okay, let's join Abraham and Sarah after the feast is over and the angels have gone away, right? Two of them went to Sodom, one of them went back to heaven. When he first meets them, is he aware that they're angels? No, because the Torah says, Anashim. He saw three humans. He wasn't aware until they start talking to him, like, where's Sarah? Oh, you're going to have a child next year. Like, eventually, the angels disclose their angelic status to Abraham and Sarah. But when he first sees them, what does he see? Three human beings. So can you imagine, let's join Sarah and Abraham at the end of the party, okay? Sarah and Abraham are cleaning up the table, they're doing the dishes. And Abraham's looking at Sarah, Sarah's looking at Abraham. Sarah says, you know, Abraham, we just wasted 180 shekel feast on three guys who were feeding the food to the cats and dogs when we weren't looking. There was no need. Nobody was hungry. Nobody was satisfied. There was nothing going on here. It was all a fake out. Right? What do you think, Abraham? And Abraham's thinking, you know, Sarah, that's a great question. How come God did this? Why couldn't he just turn the thermostat down? And we could have been nice to real people who needed our help. No, because there's a message here. You know what God's telling us? It's all about what you see. It's not about reality. I'll say it again. It's about what a human being sees that, for all intents and purposes, becomes reality. So if I see a poor person, and I'm sensitive to that person's plight, and I open my heart to them, what if someone comes to me after and says, you know, Kaplan, you're an idiot. You know the guy that you spent an hour with and you gave him $50 and you felt so compassionate for him and you listened to his troubles. He's a con guy. He has a hotel room and he makes $500 a day pilfering unsuspecting people from their money. And he looks a certain part, but it's all a game. He's a con man. He's in a couple of David Mamet's great movies. So you were conned. Let me ask you a question. Is that germane? Not at all. I saw a need. He appeared to me as someone in need. The fact that this guy was using me is irrelevant. The fact that the angels could not benefit physically from the attention and love of Abraham and Sarah, who cares? The human being looks, sees, and fills a need. Whether the need is real or not, I mean, we like to think that when we bestow our kindness on a person, that it's a real kindness. But what if it's not a real kindness? So, in other words, our Torah reading here is sort of exploring what if. What if the people you're loving and being kind to don't really need your love and kindness because they're not even humans? God is saying, Abraham, Sarah, don't do it for them. Do it for you. When you are a sensitive human being that has developed over hundreds and hundreds of years of creation to come to you, Abraham and Sarah, at this point in creation, you're magic. The fact that you can see a need, an appearance of a need, it doesn't matter. The reality is there was a need. Oh, there were angels? That's not the point. The point is that when we bestow kindness on somebody, when we give our heart to someone, when we behave as humans to someone, it's about appearances. Are we sensitive? Are we tuned in? What do we see? What we see becomes the actual reality of the event. But what if the event is not what I perceive? Okay, Mazel Tov. You still get credit. You're still a wonderful human being. So in other words, God is teaching Abraham and the children of Abraham and Sarah, us, a very profound lesson from beginning to end. What did you see? Oh, you saw what you believed to be truth and reality? That's enough for me. Go with it. Because how could we ever know a truth or reality? We're not God. That's the whole point. We could never know. It's beyond human comprehension. So what do? Do we just sit back in our tent and say, okay, then what's the point? No, au contraire. We get up, we run out of the tent, we wait at the gates of Sodom and Gomorrah if necessary, and we don't care who they are. If there is a need, if I want to be sensitive to another human being, to hold their hand and give them a metaphorical hug and support them in their time of need, that makes a reality of our world. Our world is all about appearances, because what else could there be? It's a magical idea. So we should go forward from here empowered, because what we see, what we perceive is reality. And I'll just end, not on a sour note, but just to show you the power of Lashon Hara, evil speech. Because if reality is the only truth, how I see reality, if you steal my reality by profaning reality, you basically raped my mind. So in other words, if I deliberately come and manipulate you through words, through newspapers, online, all the time, that's what's going on now. If I take your mind and I hijack your mind and I convince you to see a reality that's not real, but I'm not doing it because it just happens. I'm doing it because I have an agenda. Can you think of how evil that is? To do that to somebody? And that's why the Torah treats somebody who speaks Lashon Hara, evil speech, who defines and steals someone's reality from them and manipulates somebody into believing something that's not real. That's like one of the most heinous crimes that it's compared to murder, because you're kind of murdering the person's appearance of how the world really is. So if I manipulate you into believing this is true and I do it with an agenda, oh my gosh, it's a really bad thing. So then where do we go? What we do is a pursuit of truth. And I'll leave you with the thoughts of Abraham and Avimelech, right? Avimelech says to Abraham, what did you see here that you had to lie, Abraham, goody two-shoes? I heard about you, Abraham, that you were this great guy. Instead, you tell me that Sarah and you are like brother and sister. I did this innocently. Abraham says, you're a big fat liar, Avimelech, first of all. I never lied. Technically, where we come from, we are like husband, brother and sister. Fine. You're the one, Avimelech, who perverted and corrupted the reality. You chose to see Sarah because you wanted her. You were desirous of her. You chose to ignore the facts. You never asked me or Sarah, hey, are you a married woman? Because you didn't want to hear the reality. You weren't interested in reality. And had you been interested in reality, you wouldn't have sinned. Why aren't you interested in reality? Because, and he says this to him, Ein Yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh. No one fears God here. Guess what the word Yirah, fear of God, comes from? How you see things. To see and experience brings one to God's level, to appear before God and to fear God. If one doesn't look at the reality and sees, oh my gosh, what is reality, then you don't really have a fear of God. And that's what Abraham is saying to him. You know what, Avimelech? You made your own reality for yourself. And in that reality, it was okay to take Sarah because she wasn't married. But you were ignoring the obvious. You didn't want to ask the questions because you chose to do this. So again, there aren't easy answers. But I'll tell you two things. Number one, let us all resolve to continue to see, be sensitive, and to help others. And B, let us double down, like Abraham would, on a pursuit of emes, of truth, to ask those questions. The questions that Avimelech was scared to ask for fear that he would hear an answer he didn't like. Let us, if we ever find ourselves in that situation, then we know we're Avimelech and we're not Abraham anymore. And at that point, we cut, chase. We say, that's it, we're not going there. And that's why our parsha is keeping up appearances.